Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. The death of a child can be one of the hardest things to face in life. When a child dies, parents are often left with a world of pain that others don't understand. When a child passes away, what helps to find comfort or soothe the pain of the loss? Today we're talking about parent bereavement, and we're opening our electronic talking circle to parents and loved ones to share about ways to live through grief. Join us for this discussion right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's Minister of Indigenous Affairs was in Winnipeg this week to meet with the families of murdered and missing Aboriginal women. It's part of a cross-country tour she's making before launching a full national investigation. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, the minister noted these meetings were different.
Indigenous Affairs Minister Carolyn Bennett says these meetings are important to help set the parameters for the inquiry, which is expected to get underway this summer. Bennett described Winnipeg as ground zero and the growing awareness that Canadians have for the struggle and plight of Aboriginal women in Canada. But she says in Winnipeg, unlike other cities she's toured, there seems to be more anger.
People are concerned about the police, they're concerned about government, and frankly, they were quite skeptical as to whether an inquiry will help at all.
Winnipeg is Bennett's 11th stop on her pre-inquiry tour. Some describe the meeting as tense, especially from people who attended and who carried a lot of pain for years. Thelma Favelle, whose niece Tina Fontaine was murdered in 2014 and whose death reignited calls for an inquiry, says money being spent on a national inquiry would be better spent on creating safe havens for young Aboriginal people.
This thing will never bring Tina back, but if it's going to help another child, then her death is not for nothing.
Carolyn Bennett admits it will be a challenge to determine the mandate and scope of a national inquiry. She says it must deal with key issues, but also address the concerns of victims' families. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Yupik and Inupiaq people discuss the word Eskimo, this after Alaska Airlines recently unveiled its new look. Alaska Native people criticized the company's campaign, which prompted the airline's chief executive to apologize. Charles Enoch has more.
Alaska Airlines unveiled their new airplane and website designs late last month. Both prominently feature the familiar face of a smiling Alaska Native elder. The website also included the phrase "Meet Our Eskimo," which was quickly changed to "Meet the Eskimo." But does the change go far enough?
I would rather be called Inupiaq, because that's what I am, and my children are a Yupik.
That was Blossom Twitchell from Kotzebue.
I want them to be able to connect to their culture, and people won't group us in as little people that live in igloos, give little Eskimo kisses all the time. We are so much more than that.
No one seems to have a definitive answer on where the word Eskimo came from. An article by University of Alaska Fairbanks linguist Lawrence Kaplan said the word, meaning eater of raw meat, might have been given to the Inupiaq people by Western explorers. The article also says the Canadian version of the word could have come from an Ojibwa word meaning knitter of snowshoes. The word isn't used much in Canada as it's considered offensive by many Inuit in the country, but Alaska Natives say they have been using the word for a while. Nils Alexi is a Yupik elder from Bethel.
In my first memories, we used Eskimo when referring to ourselves or each other. Then, along the way, we started using the word Yupik to describe ourselves.
Alexi is like many Yupiks interviewed for this story that are accustomed to the term and have no firm position about whether it's appropriate or not. Other Yupik elders, however, don't like the term. Dr. Teresa John is an associate professor for Indigenous Studies at UAF.
If we stop using the names other people give us, they will understand. Our ancestors were proud to be Yupik and were strengthened by their way of life. They wanted us, their descendants, to keep our tradition alive.
The airline ultimately changed their website greeting, completely removing the word Eskimo, and stated they are looking forward to working together with the Alaska Native community to ensure their actions reflect their respect for all Alaska Natives and Alaskans alike. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. A parent losing a child is not an easy topic to talk about. But for someone going through it, grieving for a child takes up a huge amount of energy. It not only consumes the life of the grieving parent, but can spill over to friends and family. Experts say taking the time to talk about the loss can help those who are grieving. And we'll do some of this on today's program. And we also know that talking about death openly may not be something that folks in different communities do on the norm. And we don't mean to be offensive with our program today. Instead, we are looking at healing from the loss of a child from a health viewpoint, and a topic that many have shared with us on air needs to be addressed. And we're going to start with a story that was brought to our program earlier this year. Navajo community advocate Carl Smith, who is also the executive director of the Battered Family Services in Gallup, New Mexico, joined our airwaves for a discussion on social disparities. On our broadcast, he shared the story about the death of his son, Calvin Smith. It's a story he's told many times to help those living on the streets and dealing with addiction. Carl told us his son was fighting addiction and was living from motel to motel, selling jewelry on the streets of Gallup. One day, Carl's son went missing and ended up dying of hypothermia. Carl was the one who found him.
I just knelt at his feet, at his shoe, and I told him, I'm really sorry, because I come from a severe chronic alcoholic background, drug use. I was homeless. I was living the streets at one time. And he's seen throughout his childhood, I raised him, me and him by himself. And he's seen me, what I did, what I went through, drinking every day, but remaining employed. And he saw me, and he saw all the violence, everything that has to do with alcoholism. He remained in school. He saw all of that. And that's why when I knelt down, I told him, I'm sorry, son, you know. Please forgive me. Please forgive me because of what I did and what you saw and what I put you through. This is how you ended up. I don't blame nobody but myself, I told him. But I told him, I need you to forgive me because that's how God wants it. And then before I got up, I told him, you know what I'm going to do for you, son? From this day forward, I'm going to work for people such as you. Anybody that's living in violence, anybody that's homeless, anybody that needs some type of a hand, I will do it for you, my son, I told him.
And that was Carl Smith, who was the executive director of the Battered Family Services. Carl Smith, who says, he says talking about his son publicly honors the memory of his son and has also been a part of his own healing process. And we'd like to thank Carl once again for sharing his story. And we are turning this to you as well. Do you have advice for parents going through the same thing? Give us a call and join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And now joining us from Colorado Springs, Colorado, is DJ Vanis, and he's a motivational storyteller and owner of Native Discovery Incorporated. And he is from the Odawa Nation. It's our pleasure to welcome DJ back. Hello, DJ.
Good morning, Tara. Thanks for having me back on.
And DJ, thank you. What would you like to say about Carl's story that he shared?
I was getting goosebumps listening to it. I mean, that's, you know, when something tragic like that happens, especially to a child, you know, I think a lot of times we as human beings want to make something positive out of that horrific experience. And that's something that I can definitely relate to. We lost our son. He was a week old in 2003. And, you know, every day, you know, we think about him. And it was one of those unexpected moments in time that leave you reeling, you know, it down to your core. And I wanted to do something positive with that very negative experience. And that's why I ended up writing the book Spirit on the Run.
And DJ, why is it important? We constantly hear from experts that, you know, you have to talk about this. You have to, you know, figure out what is, you know, the best path for you dealing with your grief. DJ, what are your thoughts on this advice of it's good to talk about it?
Well, I think it's an individual choice. I know that there, in much respect to the tribal traditions that don't encourage people to talk about that. That's, you know, I'm not trying to tell anyone out there listening what they should believe in, but I do agree that it's a personal journey, and we have to do what we need to do to heal and to be able to move forward again and be able to be a functional family member and a contributor, you know, to our tribal nations and our society. It's a very individual journey. Nobody can tell you how to mourn, how to heal, how to grieve, but I do know that it is important to do so, because that's one of the things that was burning inside of me, you know, until I started, I went to ceremony. I also, and with great resistance, listened to my wife, and we ended up going to grief counseling for a while, and both of those things helped me tremendously. I don't think I would be where I am right now without both of those, both the traditional route of wiping the tears ceremony and also going to see a professional counselor. It helped me tremendously to start moving forward again.
And DJ, I know a lot of people who have lost a loved one and sometimes ask themselves that question. Does the pain ever go away? Does healing ever come after losing a child? DJ, what would you like to say?
I've been asked that question many times, and I always give the same answer. I say some hurts don't heal in one lifetime. You know, I carry that pain. My wife does too, every day. You know, we think about our son Kieran. Every time I see, you know, a little boy in the airport that's, you know, 12 or 13 years old, the age my son would have been, you know, I pause. And, you know, I've healed enough to move on and, like I said, do things positive, you know, make it a positive. But it never goes away. You know, you heal enough to move on, but you carry that scar. And I, you know, it also keeps his memory alive for us. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that he's with us every day.
All right. And DJ, we do appreciate you being here with us and sharing as well. And folks, you can also join our conversation, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if it feels more comfortable to call in anonymously, you can too, 1-800-996-2848. And DJ, when you take a look at sharing your story to help others heal, what do you hope that people get when you are sharing you've walked this journey too?
I hope that they get that they're not alone. You know, that was one of the things I'm forever grateful for, to friends, family, colleagues that came from every corner, corners I couldn't even imagine, you know, when we went through our loss, that said, you know, we were with you. We support you, you know, and some people shared their stories of loss, and it made us feel not so alone, because when you go through a loss like this, you think you're the only one in the world going through it. Nobody knows this kind of pain, and it's just not so. You know, there, if we pick our heads up and wipe the tears away, we see there's other people that have been through it too that can give us some wise advice and give us some strength when we need it most, to know that we're not going through it by ourselves.
And DJ, if you don't mind, I'd like you to share just some of those emotions that you went through when you did lose your son, and how those emotions have changed. And again, folks, if there's anything you'd like to add, please do call in. Our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Go ahead, DJ.
Well, our son was born 3 months early. He was 2 pounds, 7 ounces. It was an emergency delivery. My wife went into early labor, and he passed a week later, 7 days later, in our arms. My wife and I held him as he made the journey. And I'll tell you that, you know, the emotions that week and the weeks to follow the loss were just a tornado of everything from anger to fear to the deepest sadness I've ever felt, the most tears I've ever cried. And, you know, the lingering effect after that was kind of a desperate, you know, search for something that would keep me from jumping into that black hole that I encountered every morning that I woke up. And there's this black pit, and I'm standing on the edge, and every day I imagine what it would be like just to jump down there. And I knew that that wouldn't be good for my family. It wouldn't be good for my daughter, my wife, my friends. And it was a real struggle to stay out of that pit. I know it's tempting to do, and it was a struggle every day. But over time, you know, those emotions tend to temper and kind of settle down, which anybody who's been through a recent loss, I hope that you're listening to these words, that, you know, over time, it does get better a little bit, day by day, week by week, month by month. It never does fully go away, but it does, the emotions do tone down if we do things that help us get to the other side of it. Like I said, being able to talk about it, being able to go through ceremony or counseling, those are things that sometimes we have to do to rebuild our life and heal.
Those are great words, DJ. And folks, if there's anything that you'd like to share, you know, if these words are helping and you just want to tell DJ thanks, you can call in to 1-800-996-2848. DJ Van Ness is with us. He is a motivational storyteller and owner of Native Discovery Incorporated, and he comes to us from the Odawa Nation. Again, 1-800-99-NATIVE is how you join the conversation. We're going to go now to Phoenix, Arizona. We have Dr. Joanne Cacciatore on the line. She's an associate professor at Arizona State University and founder of the MISS Foundation, an international nonprofit group that helps families whose children are dying or have died. It's our pleasure to welcome Dr. Cacciatore to the hour. Hello, Dr. Cacciatore.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me and for talking about this.
And thanks for being with us. And Dr. Cacciatore, is there anything you'd like to start off with? Maybe anything to parents who are grieving over the loss of a child?
Well, first, I was deeply moved by Karen's story, right? You know, this little boy who I think it sounds like might have died 11 or 12 years ago, and the clear and apparent love of his father. I'm deeply moved by that. I've been doing this work for 2 decades, committed my life in terms of my practice and my research because of my own experience with my young daughter's death in 1994. And, you know, losing a child across cultures, across religious groups, across socioeconomic groups, seems to be one of the most devastating human experiences. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that we in the West don't really like to talk about. It's very difficult to talk about something that's so profoundly terrifying for people who haven't experienced it. And so I really appreciate that you're opening this up for people who really want to talk because they've had the experience. Once you've experienced the death of a child, one of the most important things in my research that most parents share is that they desperately want others to remember their child with them. They don't want their child to be forgotten. And so this really gives people an opportunity to connect with their child who died, and maybe encourages others to reach out to someone they might know whose child has died and say, you know, I saw a dragonfly today and I thought of Josh, or something like that. So it's so important for us to be able to talk about the things that matter, and this is that chance.
And Dr. Cacciatore, a lot of this is facing grief. And, you know, it's easy to say something like that. You got to face your grief. But really, how difficult is it to just decide it's time to face this grief?
Oh, it's an incredible challenge for a lot of reasons. So at the individual level, one of the reasons it's so difficult to face grief or even not even face grief, but embrace grief, is because it's overwhelming, it's terrifying, it's confusing. We look in the mirror and we don't know that face anymore. It's unfamiliar territory for most of us, especially traumatic grief. And just by definition in the empirical literature, any child's death is classified as traumatic. So I think at the individual level, I think it reduces us to sort of basic survival mode. We forget who we are. We lose our identity. There are so many peripheral losses. And emotions are not a monolithic experience. Emotions occur, you know, with secondary emotions and tertiary emotions. And there's so much that complicates our sense of self in the world. But then you move outwardly to the mesosystem, in a sense, and you look at the way that our changed perspective of ourselves influences our relationship with our partners and other children and our parents and friends and families and coworkers. And there's something that happens in the social space. So research suggests, for example, that social constraints around bereavement actually intensify and prolong negative psychological outcomes. In plain English, what that means is when others imply explicitly or implicitly that we shouldn't talk about our grief, shouldn't remember our loved one who died, that actually can intensify our inner distress. So there's this interaction between what happens inside of us and the space that occupies two people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And hearing that, and sometimes, as we heard DJ say earlier, sometimes that even goes against our customs of wanting to talk about this. And my question is, you know, how do you find balance? Folks, you can also share your thoughts today, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. DJ, is there anything you'd like to share about, you know, finding that balance?
Well, I was just listening to what Dr. Cacciatore said and just kind of shaking my head up and down the whole time. Finding that balance is critical to moving forward in life. I know that after we lost Kieran, you know, one of the things that I felt immediately was out of balance. I felt like the whole, you know, my whole life had tipped upside down. My wife, too. I mean, we were going through this together, but it's like your life shatters in 1,000 pieces. You know, this horrible thing happens that you never, I would have never in 1,000,000 years expected that. And that was the other part, too, is it's the worst kind of surprise to get in your life. And I withdrew. I was very withdrawn after that loss because I felt like I didn't want to talk about it. It was too painful. It was, you know, I kind of tried to push it down, but I'm sure Dr. Cacciatore has seen people do that too and seen the devastating effects that can have on somebody's spirit, somebody's psyche, even somebody's body. And I was feeling it every day. And that's why, you know, I ended up, like I said, I was so grateful to go through the wiping of the tears ceremony and then, like I said, having counseling and just being able to talk to friends and family about it and kind of relieve that pressure that was building up. And I felt like a balloon that was ready to pop. And striking that balance was critical, I think, to my health and to my life.
Thanks for that, DJ. And folks, if there's anything you'd like to share today, you can. Phone lines are open, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And DJ, and also Dr. Cacciatore, I do want to thank both of you for sharing, you know, a personal side to this too. And I know some of the work that both of you are doing, you get feedback on what people have to say about, you know, the help they get, or even just having somebody to talk to or share these feelings. And we appreciate you being here with us today too. And folks, if there's anything you'd like to ask the two guests we have on the line, you can call in 1-800-996-2848. And we are talking about grieving over a lost one when a parent loses a child. And we know that is one of the most devastating things that can happen. And if there's anything you'd like to share, you can call us 1-800-99-NATIVE. And again, if it feels more comfortable to talk anonymously, you can too. Also, for loved ones and friends on the outside, how are you coping with the loss of a loved one's child? How are you supporting parents and family who are also suffering from this loss? You can join the conversation too, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And often, you know, people ask the question, I don't know what to say, when they are wanting to, you know, comfort somebody who has lost a child. Dr. Cacciatore, what's your advice for that question?
What I found in my research is that what we say is a lot less important than how we stay with people, how we hold space for them, how we just bear witness to their suffering. DJ was saying something interesting when he was talking about Kieran's death and at first sort of pushing it down. And I do encounter this with people. And so part of the problem is when we aren't able to tolerate our own state of emotion, and when others around us aren't willing to bear witness and just kind of create a space for us to, when we're ready, explore our emotions and how we feel, then the only option that most people are left with is to take themselves out of that space. And humans are kind of creative because we take ourselves out vis-a-vis many self-harming and destructive behaviors. Some of them, you know, on a continuum, we can use drugs and alcohol to take us away from our emotional pain. We can use food. We can use television. We can use pornography, sex. We can use gambling. We can use, as human beings, we can even use work or exercise or spirituality in excess that takes us away from our painful emotions. And the key with grief is having a supportive and compassionate circle around us so that we can stay with the pain, so that we don't have to leave it, so that we don't have to distract. And because that only leads us to a continual or chronic state of having to take ourselves from pain.
And, you know, Dr. Cacciatore, I want you to pick up on that after we get back from the break, because that's really important to talk about, you know, going into this space and maybe even, you know, creating more obstacles for us to have to go over. Hang tight, folks. We are going to break here, but our phone lines will remain open. You can join us 1-800-996-2848. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Tara Gatewood, host of Native America Calling. Hoop dancing is a colorful form of storytelling through movement. Dancers can use as many as 50 hoops with intricate moves that combine skill and grace. On the next Native America Calling, we'll discuss the history and evolution of hoop dance in our Native communities. We hope you can join us. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Raina Thiel, White House liaison to American Indians and Alaska Natives. The health of Native people is important to me. With health insurance, you can get care anytime and anywhere you need it. I have health insurance, and I encourage you to sign up too. Visit healthcare.gov/tribal or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Koyana.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and today we're talking about parental bereavement. And we've heard from our guests that when a child dies, parents and family members are left to face grief. And we're also opening up our phone lines to you to share as well. If you've experienced this firsthand, what have you done to face the weight of losing a child? What support did you get from your friends or family in your time of grief? And what was the most helpful? Also, what were some of the unhelpful things that you'd like to caution people against presenting to parents who are grieving? Also, did your Native community, religion, or culture help you through? Give us a call and join our conversation. Our number is 1-800-99-NATIVE. That's also 1-800-996-2848. And if you're a loved one of a bereaved parent, we want to hear from you too. What are you doing to find the right words of support? And what has been the best to help bereaved parents? You can also join this conversation on social media too. We're on Twitter with the handle at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today from Phoenix, Arizona, is Dr. Joanne Cacciatore, and she is an associate professor at Arizona State University and founder of the MISS Foundation, an international nonprofit group that helps families whose children are dying or have died. Also with us on the line from Colorado Springs, Colorado, is DJ Vanis, and he's a motivational storyteller and owner of Native Discovery Incorporated, and he is from the Odawa Nation. It's our pleasure to have both of them back here with us. And Dr. Cacciatore, before the break, you were talking about, not going into that shell and facing grief. Is there anything else you'd like to finish with?
Well, I think facing grief, certainly. And I think as we, in a sense, mature through grief and begin to trust ourselves with the very, very powerful emotions, there are a plethora of very, very powerful emotions that grief brings with it. And as we start to slowly unfold into them and learn how to tolerate them and face them, in a sense, over time, we actually do learn how to embrace our grief because the reason for our grief is because of love. We do not grieve for that which we do not love. The reason for extraordinary grief, in fact, is extraordinary love. And so we start to learn that grief is one way that we can stay connected. It's not the only way. And certainly opening ourselves up to being able to feel our full range of human emotions, including, quote, the dark emotions, the grief and the anguish and the despair, also opens us up to more joy and the capacity for more of the, you know, powerfully joyful emotions and serenity than we probably had ever had the capacity to experience before.
All right. Thank you for that, Dr. Cacciatore. And folks, you can also join us today. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And phone lines are open. The number 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And let's go ahead and say hello to a guest or a caller. We're going to say hello to Maddie in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Maddie, what would you like to share?
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share that I lost a child. It's been 30 years now, but she disappeared, and she was 16, and she was hitchhiking. She was a very good child. All children are, but she was doing well in school, was an athlete, but she insisted on seeing friends. So she was hitchhiking and didn't make it to her destination, and was missing for 10 years. And then her remains were found, and I don't have to go into details, but there was an investigation. There is no there was no determination of cause of death. That's it's been 20 years, but I guess what I wanted to say that just that there's many ways to lose a child. They're all very unnatural because, you know, you expect that you will go before your child. What was helpful for me was people just sharing their experiences of loss. I did not encounter anybody personally that had a child missing during that time, and I looked for a support group. There was none, and somebody said you should start your own. And in hindsight, I wish I would have, but I didn't have the internal resources to do that at the time. And you know, when someone's missing, that's a whole different specter, because you can easily think the absolute worst. But I tried very hard to focus on the positive, because of course you don't know. And I have a vision of her, you know, being very happy. And when her remains were found, not too many people. I don't know. It's off the spectrum, sort of, for typical experiences. So I guess a lot of people are uncomfortable, and even to this day, I often don't mention it because I'm concerned about making other people uncomfortable, which of course is, you know, crazy, but that's the reality. And it is helpful when people have known my daughter and talk about her. And I just wanted to say quickly that in situations where a child dies, I think it's important to remember the whole family, particularly siblings, whether they're older or younger, and make sure there is support for them. And
sure. And Madi, that's definitely something really big to consider. And you've opened up a lot for us here in this conversation, and very sorry to hear about your loss. And I think you bring up some really strong points. And Madi, hang out on the line. Dr. Cacciatore, I wanted to give you a moment. Madi has brought us to several important things to think about when we are talking about a grieving parent. And Dr. Cacciatore, is there anything you want to start off with?
Again, you know what you said. I'm so sorry, Madi. It's a horrific, horrific thing to experience the death of a child, and her being missing for 10 years before they found her. Heartbreak, just incredible heartbreak. I think she said something that's really profound that I often hear from parents implicitly or explicitly. One of the hard things about losing a child in the family is the unnaturalness of it. We don't expect it, especially in 21st century. We don't expect that our children will die before us. And so the unnaturalness of it, I think, adds to sort of the abnormity from others, you know, this sort of, we don't know what to say or how to treat this. And so people tend to avoid the you know, making the mother or the father or the brother or the sister or the grandparents cry. So a couple of things she said that are really, really important is noting that a naturalness of the death, and that is something that we need to be talking about as a society, and that the entire family grieves it, both as individuals and as a collective unit. So mothers are affected, fathers are affected, grandparents are affected, and siblings, and then as a unit, the whole family. I mean, that, you know, at holidays or at rituals or at festivals or at sacred moments, there's always a person missing. And everyone knows that. It's in everyone's heart, although oftentimes in family systems, everyone's afraid to say it. And so I help families sometimes when I'm doing work with families, I help them come up with new rituals or ways to remember so that everyone can take, even if it's just a moment of silence or lighting a candle, you know, or burning something, you know, something, some way of saying we pause to acknowledge this person we love and we miss. And that can be incredibly helpful for all of the individual family members, including siblings, because she's absolutely right. Siblings often get missed in this, and siblings have lost not only their brother or sister who died, but their family unit as it used to be. Moms and dads aren't the same people anymore. Things have changed. It's a very dramatic shift for the whole family.
All right, thank you for that. And Madi, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
The words that well, first of all, thank you. And the words that helped me the most during all this were something that a woman said to me who had lost her son who died from leukemia. And she said that, you know, when you get through, quote unquote, you're born again with a broken heart. And I think loss is very individual. I would never suppose to gauge someone else's grief or loss, but I think any large loss, when you move forward, finally, it's like that. You're born again with a broken heart. So you're still a little piece missing, but you can still really, really enjoy the gift of your own life.
Madi, well said. Thank you for sharing with us today. And folks, if there's anything you'd like to add, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And what do you think about this, that sometimes people shy away from parents who are grieving? What's your advice to both those staying away and to those parents who are seeing this firsthand? 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us. We're going to go now to Anchorage, Alaska, and hear from Nick, who is listening on KNBA. Nick, thank you for your call, and go ahead, share your thoughts.
Sure, thank you. I was struck by the uncanny timing of your program. I will do my best to hold it together while I talk. December 21st, 4 days before Christmas, my son Wesley passed away. And so 7 weeks ago, Wesley's middle name was Makedo, so, you know, Dakota Sioux, meaning blue earth. Wesley died unexpectedly in his sleep. He had a history of febrile seizures, and medical examiner thinks that it was possibly linked to that, but we'll probably never know for sure. Sudden unexplained death of a child is what they call it, SUDC. And obviously our family has been devastated. I'm the one who found him in his bedroom, and his six-year-old sister was at my side, and it was the most horrific thing ever that a parent can possibly imagine. But we sought out help right away, and I agree with what DJ said. You know, it's like you can't tell other people what to do, but we knew we couldn't do this alone, and so literally went to grief counseling the very next day. And I've sought out treatment through something called EMDR, which is very successful with post-traumatic stress disorder. And it was able to, the trauma was crippling, and it was keeping me from doing everyday life. And the EMDR helped put the trauma where it's supposed to be in the brain. And I can go on with life now in a kind of normal way, you know. Anyways, I was just going to also share that in addition to talking with family and friends and seeking out professional therapy, music has been a big healing point for me. I play guitar. I write songs. I've been playing since I was 11. When this first happened, I had a range of emotions, and I thought to myself, hey, I should probably write a song about this. And then you think, well, how can I possibly capture this in one song? So I've had this idea to write a song to convey each emotion. And so I started with poems, and I got my thoughts out, my words out in poem form, and then I put those poems to music. And before I wrote the music, I just read the poems, and it was healing and comforting. And then I sang the songs and played the songs, and they became healing. And then I recorded them, and now I can just listen to them anytime I want, and they continue to heal. And now I'm sending that music. I don't really play in front of people. I don't share it with people, but I am sharing with my friend, my best friend back in Chicago area, Colin, who his father grew up on the Leech Lake Reservation. He's putting native flute to my songs and putting some native drumming to it. So it's helping him heal. So I just wanted to share that, you know, even if you're not a musician, taking your words and putting them down on paper to look at later on, even if they're the saddest things you've ever written, which these songs are. They're called Sadness, Disbelief, Anger, helpless and guilty. That's what I've got so far. Those are the emotions I'm feeling. And there's more in there, but at any rate, I just wanted to share that sometimes just getting those things down on paper and reading them can be helpful and healing for people going through this.
All right, Nick, I do appreciate your call and commend you for your strength, and very sorry to hear about your loss. And DJ, I wanted to give you a moment. Any words for Nick?
Wow, I was just blown away. What a tragic but beautiful story, in the fact that, again, trying to do something with it that's healing, that's positive, using the power of music, you know, to get those emotions out of our spirit and put them, you know, to song, which I don't think will just be healing for Nick, but also he said his friend and maybe other people that he shares that with too. I think there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, that again, going back to, I can relate to what Nick said, because that's what I did with our loss. Is, like I said, wrote the book Spirit on the Run, which isn't an autobiography, but the main character in the story goes through that devastating loss of a child. And so I wanted to write something, I wanted to share something that would help people navigate this minefield that you suddenly find yourself on after the loss of a child. And the feedback I've gotten from the book has been incredible. You know, for me, it was cathartic. I mean, it was definitely healing to be able to put that on paper and be able to share a story. It took quite a few years to do. It took 5 years. It shouldn't have taken that long, but there were times where I had to walk away from it. I couldn't write anymore. It was too draining. It was too painful. But on the other side of it, I'm glad that I did, because it not only helped me heal, but it apparently, from the feedback I'm getting, it's helping other people to do the same.
All right. Thanks, DJ. And Nick, thanks again for your call there in Anchorage. We're going to say hello now to Annette, who is in Kamiai, Idaho, tuned in on KIYE. Annette, thank you for your call. And what would you like to share?
Yes, my name's Annette. Mocha is my Indian name. I just wanted to mention, you know, that those that lose their loved ones is, you know, to be remembered, to always, you know, not forget them. My little baby, Thackton and Douglas Wilbur, he would be 14 tomorrow. And so I added it up, and I was thinking, gee, 5,000 days, you know, without him. And it's, you know, not to be forgotten. Families need to be able to share and say, you know, oh, I still remember your baby, you know, and not just think it wasn't, you know, it didn't happen. All of us do grieve, and for myself, I ask the Lord to help me to be able to be healed by that and to know that, you know, someday, you know, I'll be able to be joined up with him. And that's the greatest joy that I feel, that the Lord has blessed me with, to be healed through a lot of this, because, you know, when we go through grief, we don't know who to turn to. And the best one that I've turned to is the Creator God, the Lord Jesus Christ, that helped heal me. And he showed many people to me, with women carrying their children as they're pregnant. My baby was only 6 months old. And when I lost him, I felt so bad. But I thought, well, when I get the time, I'm going to try and encourage women to carry their children in a good way, to always show that, you know, you don't have to go through having abuse, mental abuse, when you're carrying your child. You know, you need to go to family that will help support you. And so I reach out to women, and, you know, I encourage them to take good care of themselves, and to always pray, and, you know, and to watch, you know, what they listen to, or watch what they see on TV even.
And Annette, those are very, very strong words. And, you know, that reminder of keeping in a good way when, you know, when we are carrying children. I do appreciate you for giving us a ring, and very sorry to hear about your loss. But again, commend you as well for your courage to call in and share. I got one more call we're going to bring in. We're going to bring in a caller in northern New Mexico. Caller, thank you for reaching us today. And what would you like to share?
Well, the story is about 35 years ago. When we were kids, we had a good friend who fell off a cliff and died. She was 5 years old. in our community really turned their backs on the mother and told her she needed to just get over it and forget about it. And her husband left her. And it was really heartbreaking for all of us. The girl was my sister's best friend. And at the time, we weren't allowed to talk about her. And I just see now in retrospect how much damage that did to everyone. And the mother of the girl who died, she ended up being quite sick and with chronic illness and died, you know, not too long after her daughter died and left her young son, who, you know, is my age and still dealing with that grief and the sickness that's caused for him in his life. So I just think about that sometimes and how it's so important to support each other in that grief and not turn our backs on each other. And you know, it's just, thank you for the program. I was listening to it and remembering that little girl who died and how she was forgotten and forced to be forgotten and how sad it was.
All right. Thank you for your call. And let's take one more. We have Carol in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in to KUNM. Carol is on the line. Hello, Carol. You're on air. Carol, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Go ahead. You're on air.
The stories that people are sharing today is touching. All of the stories are touching my heart, and I have tears in my eyes. My son died 3 years ago in February, and we knew that he had a neurological disease from the time he was 15, and he died when he was 30. And he had all of these dreams that he couldn't realize, but to give him some sense of legacy before he died, we started my friends and spiritual community started an endowment fund in his name for anyone wanting to study at UNM in peace studies and political science. So when there is an anniversary or a holiday or a special event that he would have been included in, I raise money or send letters or do something and offer friends and family an opportunity to remember him by supporting the scholarship endowment. And it has helped me deal with the new reality, the new normal of being without him in the flesh here. And I just wanted to share that with others suffering the same tragedy.
All right, Carol, thank you for your call here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Dr. Cacciatore, is there anything you'd like to share? We are, we have a lot of callers on the line who have shared a lot today. Anything you'd like to share, Dr. Cacciatore?
Yeah, first, thank you to everyone for the courage to call in. I hear you and I see you deeply, deeply. These are stories that I hear all the time. I've been doing this work for 2 decades, and I hear all the time people whose children have died 30, 40, 50. One woman even 60 years earlier had lost her baby, and she'd never spoken of it and was shunned by her community and encouraged not to speak of it. And she turned to very unhealthy lifestyle choices because she didn't know how to cope with her emotions. We can do better for each other. We can do better for each other. We are responsible to one another, especially during a time like after traumatic grief. So there's a way that we can open our hearts and act in love instead of fear, like the rest of the world, which is acting in fear instead of love. We approach people with a loving and compassionate heart and say, how are you really? Tell us about your child, your husband, your father, your mother. Let us remember with you. That kind of compassionate support around people makes a huge difference in the way that we can carry our pain, because we're not carrying it alone anymore. We're carrying it with our community. And that is a tragic gift and a tragic privilege.
All right. Thank you for that, Dr. Cacciatore. And DJ, any final words you'd like to leave us with today, too? And I don't think we've sent a direct message to parents who are newly bereaving.
I would say two things. number one is when you go through a loss like this, the energy goes somewhere. Pushing it down is one tactic that I definitely don't recommend. It broke my heart to hear that story from the caller who said that little five-year-old girl in the community was encouraged not to talk about her, told the mother don't talk about it, and what she said was poignant. She thinks about the damage that did. So I would encourage people that are going through that pain to do something positive with it or handle it in a way that doesn't become destructive, doesn't become repressed. Get help if you need it. Talk about it. Be able to share it. Cry your eyes out. I mean, you have to do something with that energy. It goes somewhere. You can't ignore it. It doesn't go away on its own. And the second thing I would say is when somebody does go through loss, like Dr. Cacciatore said, is we should be there for each other. You know, I remember there were friends that did shy away from us when we lost our son because they didn't know what to say. And I actually had a friend that said that. He goes, I don't know what to even say to you. And I said, it's okay, man. I said, I don't know what I need to hear. I said, but I'm glad that you're here for us. And I think that's the most important part is just to be there and share the journey, share the pain with people that go through this, not to shy away. I made a commitment after we lost our son that I would never do that again. Because I was one of those people that, you know, when somebody goes through tragedy, you don't know what to say. You don't want to say the wrong thing. And I made a commitment that I would never do that again. So when people have shared those losses with me, I tell them I don't know what to say, but I give them a big hug and I tell them I'll be thinking about them and praying for them.
All right. Thank you for that. And folks, that wraps up our hour today. We do appreciate all of our callers and folks who have been also participating online, too. Thanks to our guest today, DJ Vanis, Dr. Joanne Cacciatore. And thank you again to Carl Smith for also sharing your story with us. Tomorrow, we are taking on another topic and asking you to be a part of it with your calls and your ears. Join us tomorrow when we talk about the origin and importance of hoop dancing. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our senior producer is Monica Brain. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Stephen Emmons is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. We'll be back tomorrow.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support Native America Calling. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.